Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hey, folks, it's me. What's going on?
Brian Brushwood.
I'm here. I've always been here. I was never away. You guys didn't do a show while I was gone, did you?
We may have had an amazing
What? Well, because I got all these tweets saying what a great episode it was, and I was confused because I was like, but I wasn't on it. How could it have been great?
It was such a good show that Andrew's already made a spinoff.
Oh, man.
You know, Brian, sometimes scarcity is the source of inspiration and creativity and stuff.
You went out and you wrote. Yeah, all right. Well, what did I miss? What did I miss?
Well, Bryce had his own little journey and what I'm tentatively calling the journey quest.
Got it.
And we found out, Bryce, when you ask questions of like, how could this happen? How could people stand for this and allow horrible atrocities to happen? It's people like Bryce that.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Bryce repeatedly was just following orders.
Oh, no. Real life Nuremberg.
Yeah.
Bryce is a monster. That really should have been the name of the show.
Let's just say that now the character on Journey Quest that represents Bryce has a recurring ghost in his head because he made a promise that was then broken and brought a man to his timely demise.
Among others.
Oh, dear.
Yes, among others.
Yeah. So anyway, he's a monster.
Yeah, done. Let me just note that in my journal, and we're ready to start.
First off, gentlemen, just a quick update. Something exciting happening in front of SpaceX today.
Wait, today? Because that was the thing. Like, last week I missed our opportunity to give our sixth, hell yeah, for the sixth recovered second ship on a boat.
Brian, let me ask you something. What would you do if you made an incredible achievement like that? If you all of a sudden, I don't know, you sent something to space and it came back again intact?
So many illegal drugs? Question mark. Ain't no laws in space.
We're not ruling that out. But up front, SpaceX, they've got a new display.
Oh my God! They're giving their giant middle finger to the rest of the world. They're fully erect.
Well, Brian, that's one way to put it. Or perhaps they're proudly displaying a rocket. So now they have erected the Return Falcon 9 rocket stage. It is now on display in front of the SpaceX headquarters in Hawthorne, which they had to get permission because there's an airport right by there.
So you can
actually see a live rocket in front of there if you drive by, and it's tall. It's big.
Is this the first one or the most recent one?
I believe it's the first one.
Wow. Yeah, no, because I know that I believe he had tweeted out that he was planning to reuse the other ones, but that the first one would be forever his most precious of tokens.
Mm-hmm. So wait, is this just going to be there forever, or is this like just here for the fall carnival?
Well, I mean, in some science fiction scenario, we need one more rocket.
Oh, dude, yeah, no. When somebody decides to pirate his way to space, he's like, oh, wait, I know one rocket that's not being used.
Somebody going up front to the information desk, like, yeah, I love how you have the smoke coming off the side, like the liquid oxygen's being poured into the fuel tank. That's like, what? They run outside comedically, and all of a sudden, flames erupt. And
no, I guess, I mean, like, just in terms of understanding how durable the just putting a rocket up is, like, you know, is that so, like, it's just rad.
I mean, at this point,
whatever, right?
It's like the Wright brothers kind of knew that having the first flying, airplane It didn't need to go back into service. They knew that its place was in the Smithsonian or some equivalent from then on. I assume that's what they're thinking here, is like,
yeah,
this is the first ever first stage recovered.
Yeah, they're fast accumulating rocket first stages. So I think they're like, yeah, put this one on the front lawn, whatever, you know? Sure.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I guess that's the thing is like, I mean, and it really doesn't, like, it's not like Hawthorne is going to be subjected to punishing sleet or anything, right? But just in terms of weather erosion or whatever, like, in my mind, I thought that that rockets would be something that you would not just want to leave outside.
Out to the elements. Definite. You're saying you would want to protect it so it looked pretty from now on.
Well, I mean,
you wouldn't put the first airplane outside where the hail would damage it and stuff. Yeah. Got it. I mean,
wouldn't take, like, a bunch of historic rockets and, let's say, put them all in one place, let's say a garden, as if you will, where you could go look at them and walk amongst them.
Well, hold on, are you talking about Huntsville, Alabama, Space Camp is?
Well, I was talking more like Florida, the Rocket Garden at Kennedy Space Center.
Got it. Yep. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, they may have some in Huntsville too. So they have, that's really cool there, is they have the quote, the rocket garden, where you have a bunch of historic rockets assembled there. And it's neat to see them side by side, and you're like, wow.
So I guess to answer your question, Justin, turns out rockets are tough. They go to space. Who knew?
Yeah. Oh, dude. Yeah. I mean, I have no doubt that, I guess that is just a cognitive thing, though, in my head, they are. Obviously, they need to be very, very well protected, and they are very precious because things need to be precise when they are going up, right? And we've seen, you know, very, very small imperfections cause gigantic failure. But once they come back down, yeah, whatever, you know, put a pinata on it, have a good time. Like, you know, just it's just a tough ass, you know, piece of machinery.
Right on. Real quick, let's take bets on when. Like, man, I wish Mitsula was listening or watching right now, because I would love to get his estimate on the over-under on when is the first reused first stage by Netflix, by SpaceX.
I mean, has he made, June.
Wait, June?
He said in June they are looking to launch the first reflight of one of its Falcon 9 rockets in September or October.
Wait,
oh, okay.
As soon as a month from now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
So then if I were doing my armchair Vegas bookie, I would say
September or October.
No, I mean I would set it knowing that everything needs to be perfect. I would say Halloween, over or under.
I'll take the over on that, because that's a big enough deal that I'm going to assume they want it to be just right. And there's a lot of weather things that could go wrong.
We'll see. I think that Musk will give you the estimate of when, hey, if things work out right, this will be when we'll do it. And like many things, it's hard to know the things that will not work out right. What are the unpredictable factors? And he gets, you know, criticized for that, perhaps because he doesn't qualify that as much as many people would like. But we'll see. But yeah, the goal is to do this shortly. Of course, you know, we were hoping to see the Falcon Heavy launch a year ago or more, and that's got pushed into next year. And so, you know, but the big thing coming up is next month is their whole Mars architecture announcement, which is going to be basically a month from, you know, Friday. They're supposed to be announcing their whole plan, or the big starting point, the blueprints for how they want to go to Mars, the vehicles, everything.
It's huge. It's
cool.
Like, that's so huge, it's hard for me to even wrap my mind around. Like, I just need to, like, that's one I can't even speculate upon. I just need to watch it like watching The Martian or something.
Yeah, I agree. That's one of these things when a credible person steps on stage and says, this is how we're going to get to Mars, and this is the thing that we're doing right now, and not this, hey, someday, wouldn't it be great if we do this? It's mind-blowing. You know, we're in the future. We're officially in the future at that point. Meanwhile, gentlemen, you ready for an update we talked about previously?
Sure.
Yes.
Proxima Centauri. Rumors of an Earth-like planet orbiting Proxima Centauri.
How close is Proxima Centauri? Is it proximate to us?
4.2 light years away, Brian.
Holy cow. So we're talking about in our lifetime, like one of my children could get on a craft and let's say it did, I don't know, 0.2 the speed of life, the speed of light. that's what, like a 40-year journey?
At 0.2 the speed of light, that'd probably be like a 4,000-year journey or something.
Wait, hold on. If it's 4 light years away and it got up to 0.2.
Oh, like 20%.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, it'd be like, yeah, yeah, yes, that is correct.
So we're looking at the possibility of somebody traveling. I mean, obviously, we got a lot of catching up to do, but like that's something I can wrap my mind around. So you know, we've had a lot of these space arc scenarios, but yeah, like that's not a space arc thing.
Yeah, so our best shot would be probably something like Project Starshot. Of course, that's really good at accelerating things to the speed of light or accelerating things to like 20% the speed of light in theory. The problem is the deceleration part of that, which I don't know if we can, you know, if we have some ideas for really complex sort of, you know, orbital catch the nearest star and spin around or whatever. I mean, at 20% the speed of light's ridiculously fast. Point is we could, in theory, using something like Project Starshot, send some probes there, things like that, and get data. We could start building more sophisticated telescopes aimed there, et cetera, that we have something so close could be very, very cool. So the update is the rumor was that there might be some sort of forthcoming announcement from a research group about that they may have discovered an Earth-like exoplanet there. And we don't have any set announcement yet. We're still waiting. So,
All right. Over under Halloween.
For the announcement or for us being there?
For the announcement.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to take the over on everything.
It would certainly be. NASA has announced that they're looking maybe in the late 20s to have private enterprise or somebody else go take over the International Space Station. And there was a report that came out where they pointed out that, yeah, our SLS and our Orion missions are going to be really, really kind of expensive and et cetera. And I think that NASA's in this sort of problem where they only know how to do really, really big things. You know, they can do really probe stuff. We do great. But as far as building transport systems, you know, in the sort of the way that we do it, the government contracting way to do it, and sort of the NASA sort of jobs program mentality is prohibitively expensive and making it problematic. I would love for there to be some sort of serious consideration of let's leave liquid fuel, let's leave rockets and stuff to these billionaire crazy people like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and jump right into things like laser propulsion and stuff like that, because we could build, for what we paid for International Space Station, we can theoretically build a laser propulsion system that could send probes to stars, to every planet in our solar system within hours or days. We could get stuff there. And so imagine if we're able to build payload packages like that, it really opens up the solar system and even nearby star systems within the same time periods of which we've been sending, you know, waiting for things like Pioneer and Voyager to go further out and send us data.
Well, and keep in mind that the mathematics change when you don't need to send human beings in there. That means you can have accelerations, you know, faster than would be tolerable for humans. You're suddenly lighter because you don't have to worry about, you know, fuel for people, you know, food and waste and all that stuff. But then on top of that, if you have an artificially intelligent robot, you just need to slingshot this thing out there, and then it could take all the pictures. Like, it doesn't even need to stop in the star system. Mm-hmm. It could do just a super fast flyby and get us insane amounts of data. That would be fascinating.
Yeah, our next big Mars rover, the one from NASA, the Mars 2020 rover, is going to have autonomous functionality to it. So instead of somebody sitting there on a joystick telling it what to do and waiting, you know, 30, 40 minutes, whatever. Yeah. It'll be, you know, be like, all right, I'm going to go look at this rock, guys. Like, all right, go look at that rock. Tell us what you think.
The best metaphor, and it was on a cheesy show. It was either on National Geographic or Discovery. There was two shows kind of that came out within minutes of each other because that's the way TV works. But it was about like what might an alien planet on a distant star system look like. And the best metaphor I heard was somebody said that watching a probe send in data from a star, let's say 4 light years away, Proxima Centauri or whatever, would be equivalent to watching a young child, your young child, at a spelling bee, in that you've put in months and years of training and effort and tried to think everything in advance, but ultimately you are utterly powerless when it's faced with the actual decision of trying to follow what is the most scientifically interesting possibility at any given time.
Then it sends back messages, it's cold here. Why did you send me here, Daddy?
It's like, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy.
Why so have you forsaken me?
Real quick, unrelated aside to that, I had my nieces visiting this weekend with my brother and my sister-in-law, and I took them for a ride in my car off to Santa Monica, and my little niece, Isabella, gets in the back seat in the car. Her sister are both buckled in there, and she finds, shockingly, there's a monkey puppet in the back seat of my car, right? and she finds the monkey puppet. Next thing you know, she's got the monkey puppet on her hand. She finds it can make a squeak noise, and she's making it go squeak, squeak. And then I hear squeak, squeak, and she's playing to the monkey puppet, doing a little high-pitched voice. And then about 2 minutes in the drive, she's quiet. Then all of a sudden, she just says, squeak, squeak, Uncle Andy ate all the chocolate chip cookies. And I look in the rearview mirror and I see this little kid with this puppet making accusations. And she just goes, squeak, squeak, Uncle Andy ate all the chocolate cake. And it was the creepiest thing in the world. She's adorable. She looks like Boo from, Monsters, Inc.
Sure.
And she's doing, so there's like a little six-year-old girl doing an even higher pitched voice and having a monkey make these accusations at you, you know, about you eating things and stuff. And then I'm like, I was joking that, like, yeah, that's a horror movie. I'm going to hear squeak, squeak, somebody's upstairs. Squeak, squeak, the woman in the mirror talked back to me.
Oh, jeez.
So I just wanted to share that little scary thing. Children say the scariest things.
Dude, like, do you get that, Brian? You get like super creepy stuff out of the girls?
Yeah, I think I used to notice it way more early on, and especially with other kids. I think that's the kind of thing that you notice in other kids more than your own, because once you have your own random noise generators, you notice that they generate a lot of random noise. and you stop caring and stop, ascribing meaning to most of it.
Stop listening to them.
Yes.
Just stop acknowledging. Quiet them down.
Whatever.
You have a whole battery of possible punishments.
Exactly.
Many protected by law.
Speaking of avoiding punishment, you know, it'd be punishing.
Well, you know, I think it'd be punishing to the world at large if we missed a show of weird things. And that's something that thankfully doesn't happen because of the patrons over there at patreon.com/weirdthing.
Oh, heck yes. We are only, what, $36 away from breaking the $500 per episode mark. It sure would be great if we all got a C-note for working on this thing. Wait, hold on. We do. It would be great if we got more. we would love you guys to head on over to Weird Things.
Squeak, squeak, Brian's bad at math.
Patreon.com/weirdthings. You guys can make sure that you definitely get a Weird Things episode every single week. All you got to do is join the Weirdo Brigade and kick in some cash if you enjoy the weird.
Let me bring something up. How long after the Night Attack Patreon did we do the Weird Things Patreon?
It was a good like 4 or 5 months.
Okay. But note the difference between, like, we look not unlike we look now in the Weird Things Patreon video. Right?
Hold on. Are we gonna drag beard out the Night Attack thing again?
I'm just saying, what the hell happened? I mean, like, it was for the better with that.
Well,
4 months.
Clearly, what happened is you and I gave up. I acknowledged that I was over 40, and you acknowledged that you love beards.
But yeah, just for reference, for visual viewers, let's go to the Night Attack.
Oh, I knew you were gonna do this.
I'm just saying, like, we look horrible in the Night Attack.
No, we look fine. We just
look
like
terrible in the night.
We're both pretending to be in our 20s, and then the other one, we're not.
Let's just. Oh my god! Oh.
We don't look bad. right. You're fired. Get out of here, all of you.
Anyway, it's a better video on Weird Things. Patreon.com/Weird Things. Support the show. I apparently grew a full beard in 3 weeks between the two Patreons.
I let my hair get longer.
Yeah, we get it. You're immortal. You never age. You're exactly the same forever.
I see the difference in just like, oh, yeah, Andrew was at Ghirardelli several times this week. Once. I'm only there once.
Did you just squeak, squeak yourself and then get defensive about it?
I had other things, too. You
squeak,
know,
squeak. You know. Andrew was at Ghirardelli.
I just had this vision, this like post-apocalyptic sort of future. Like in the Star Trek where like kids run everything and that's just going to be the courts. You know? Oh, yeah. Squeak, squeak. You're over 30. Squeak, squeak, time to go away. Anyhow, moving right along, gentlemen, I want to get to something I really, really wanted to talk about here.
Yeah.
You know, there was some sort of large-scale sporting event that took place over the last week or so?
Yep, yeah, I think it's called...
The World Championship of Snooker.
Yeah, the awesomer, stronger, smarter, faster... competition of the world.
Right. We are, of course, talking about the Olympics.
And that too.
How much of it did you watch, Brian?
I'm surprised at how much I've absorbed sort of just by osmosis. I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 hours worth, but I unfortunately, you know, I'm following the scandals more than the actual competitions themselves.
Mm-hmm. Justin?
I think I watched like 20 minutes of a random basketball game, but I was like at a bar, and that was it, man. I watched like none of it this year.
I watched nothing. I watched nothing. And like I kind of, to be honest with you, like in my mind, I mean, this is one. There's an article which we'll probably do another time when actually I've read some of the supporting research on it. I'm still kind of like, wait, didn't we just have the Beijing Olympics?
Oh, dude.
Oh, my God.
That's a fact. Like, as we grow up, I'm going to be generous in my terminology here. As we grow up, the time warp begins, man. After you turn 20, just time hits.
And can I tell you what's even funnier as I say this? Is I was thinking the Beijing Olympics was the last Olympics.
No, that was two. Yeah. That was 8 years ago. London was between that. Ago.
Oh, crap. London, I forgot all about London.
Yeah. No, I remember I was at Tom Merritt's place when he still lived in San Rafael watching the London closing ceremonies. Because I think we had done FSL, so it was at the beginning of FSL. But yeah, no, like that... It, man, time flies.
Hey, can I take us on a random side jag? I'm sure you have something super important, Andrew, but I asked a question on Twitter that got some people fired up, like super passionate. I asked,
am I a has-been in Austin?
Oh, please, okay. Well, first of all, as we all know, I finally made it to the D list. If you go to reddit.com/r/Austin, the question is...
You weren't even high up there. I had to scroll down like 90.
Fine. Look, I made the list. I made it all the way to D list. That's fine. I'm honored and humbled to be on this list. But more importantly, how long... The question I asked on Twitter was how long until an e-sport makes it to the Olympics? And of course, you got the initial wave of like, hopefully never. As we all know, e-sports are inside people mouth breeder, you know, fake sports or whatever. But then people started, you know, really thinking about it. They're like, dude, the shooting events in the Olympics don't even use bullets now. They use lasers. And how far off is that from being, you know, a VR esport? And, you know, in a world where we have sports, where a sport is, you know, to hit a ball with a club and golf, or to ride a horse around in a circle or whatever. I don't know. It seems like, given the fact that esports is rapidly on a trajectory to be $1 billion a year advertising, you know, mainstream primetime sport, how long will it be until we see an esport in the Olympics?
I mean, it's a great question. I think the answer is never.
Why is that?
I think because there are many, many billion-dollar sports and entertainment things that just are never going to find their way into the Olympics. I think that, you know, cricket isn't an Olympic sport. And cricket is one of the most watched things in the world. Not here, but in the rest of the world. I mean, it's incredibly huge. I think that, you know, you might – listen, when the Koreans hold the Olympics again, you know, maybe they'll try pro something. I think part of it is because games change so much. So what would you classify as like an e-sport?
That's a good question. I'm going to say anything with a electronic or computer generated component to it. However, having said that, that's a loosey goosey title because one of the initial reactions somebody had was, "Oh, what happens if a computer freezes during the middle of an e-sport?" And there's literally not a single sport that doesn't have a computer.
Yeah, right. It's a dumb response from somebody.
Yeah, acting as a response. But that's dumb. But keep in mind, the Olympics started off with art competitions. There was literature and poetry competitions.
Which were extremely subjective. And they had to get rid of things with their highly subjective scoring and stuff. And was that part of the modern Olympics?
I don't know about that. That was what it sounded like in the according to the tweets I got. However, but some people were saying, like, what defines a sport? Somebody was saying, like, there has to be a pure physical skill component to it, to which I responded, what about winning a first-person shooter is not pure physical skill? That's objective. That's not subjective. That is in Counter-Strike.
I'm not gonna get in a debate of like what's physical or what's not or whatever at all. Because that ends up ultimately being sort of a fruitless debate because of you know, is baseball really a sport? If you're I'm kidding, of course it is. But I mean, anytime you can sit there and chew copious amounts of mouth tobacco, you know, my question is part of the problem is like, okay, sports, they evolve slowly, but they relatively are the same, you know, is that, you know, an Olympic swimmer in 1908 would pretty much understand how our swimming works today. And I don't say that sarcastically because there is, now we have these special sensors and stuff. And do you know why there's so many ties in swimming?
I would assume because the mechanics or the ability to measure what counts as hitting there is
we can measure billionths of a second if we wanted to.
Right. I would think that the definition of what counts as touching though, because it's like it's an amount of like it's got to be 2 newtons of pressure or some nonsense.
It has to do with the fact that we can measure to the billionths of a second or whatever, really really finely tuned when somebody hits that. But the shape of the pool itself, each lane, there might be millimeters of difference in that.
Wow.
So it's not because we can't precisely measure when it's touched. It's because we can't guarantee that every lane is exactly the same length.
Oh, so anything within a certain window becomes a tie just to allow for the fact that the lanes are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's interesting. Well, I mean, here's Brian, to your question. With esports, I think the two things would need to happen. Number one, an esport would need to become popularized that's not proprietary. That right now, you know, Dota, League of Legends, Counter-Strike, Hearthstone, whatever it is that have gigantic esports components, they are run effectively by the publishers of those games with outside organizers putting things together but working in concert to run the tournament. I think that would be a part of it. And secondarily, you know, they would have – esports would want to be in the Olympics and lobby to do it. Right now, I don't know exactly what the motivation would be considering the organizers wouldn't necessarily want to do it because they'd be setting up another big competition that would be bigger than theirs. The players might would not want to do it since unless, you know, you really had a big, pride of country – to prove that X amount of people are the best from wherever part of the globe. And the publishers wouldn't necessarily want to do it out of hand. I mean, I guess they might have the biggest reason to want to be on a large, gigantic stage. But I think that those would be the three biggest hurdles for me.
Well, I'm not discounting the existence of the hurdles. I'm not even saying it'll happen immediately. But the things I'm seeing is an inexorable trend towards respecting esports because the reason that basketball and football and baseball are popular is because our parents' generation grew up playing those games. And it's their intimacy with those sports that allows them to watch them, watch professional players do them, and for them to project themselves into that situation, be like, that was a good catch, that was a good throw, that was a good run. And as a result, becomes very popular. We're seeing that happen with esports as well, and these are the games that people are familiar with, and they're watching other people do them extremely well. So I'm assuming, again, not 10 years, not 20 years, in my mind, we're looking at 50 or 100 years. It's inevitable that we're going to move towards primetime sporting entertainment being some variety of esport. Now, maybe it's something where people got VR goggles on and they're jumping and doing flips. There could be an athletic component to it, but it's obvious that those are the games that we like the most. So to me, it's not a question of if, but when. And much like you did, Justin, everyone's like, well, I just see this problem. And that is a problem for the next 20 minutes.
No, no, no.
But not for the next 200 years.
But I think the conquering of those problems shapes when it happens and what it looks like, right?
Well, again, the question, my interest is not in what it looks like. My question is when it happens. To me, it's an assumed ending that at some point the most popular sport in the world is an e-sport. My question is, how long after that does it become an Olympic sport?
Here's my issue with that is that what was the most popular watched esport 4 years ago? It wasn't League of Legends, you know, it was something else. And the changeover on these things are so quick, and the Olympics is every 4 years. We have not had baseball as a permanent Olympic sport, yet it's extremely possible. In 100 years, we've had certain years, host country said, yeah, we're going to have baseball, but it's not been there. And I would say that part of the thing, I'm not opposed that there's going to be some sort of Olympics, you know, some other sport or something that's going to become some other way of like esports and stuff and combining other cool things, because man, I would love to see some things that like in Olympics is a very traditional group, a very, very traditional body. Where they're going to be 100 years from now, I can't say, but I would say that part of the thing is, you know, we're not getting 23 million viewers to watch a Pong tournament.
I'm going to call Pong a straw man argument.
No, but Brian, my point is that if it's not, what's, give me an example
Pong
of
man.
What esport are we watching that was popular 5 years ago? That's my point. And it's only getting, and it's, they're getting their absolute viewerships, esports, absolutely through the roof.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm skeptical that something like
Counter-Strike,
Counter-Strike would probably be the answer to that.
Counter-Strike is 17 years old and still seems to be going strong. But again, I don't even think that'll be the one. I guess I'm confused by the question because I don't care which sport it is. My question is, when will one become universal? And I guess, am I reading you right? Is your thesis that none of them will because it turns over very quickly?
I think for the Olympic, I mean, if we had an Olympics or something else like that, it could have even a bit. I don't think, I'm not against the idea that we may have some big tournament thing the whole world watches where it is people are going to watch esports and it's bigger than the Olympics. I'm not saying no to that at all. I'm saying given the way the Olympic Committee works, where they worked for 100 years, the way that group is and how anti they are to new things, and that is in their DNA to be very anti anything newer things like this, that I would be surprised. You would have to have a fundamental change in that organization, the way they work for that to happen.
I mean, So your answer is never, like, so, literally, I mean, never.
Andrew's not saying no, and correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew, not saying no because of esports. He's saying no because of the Olympics.
Yes, correct.
But he is saying never is his answer.
As far as the Olympics, yeah, I'll go on the record and say we will never see an esport as a continuous Olympic event. There might be something where, you know, if it's held in, you know, some country that's very pro that wants to do as a, you know, hey, we're going to do this year because we get to choose something crazy and we're big into this. And also you get into sort of the equality game too, because that gets into thing like, okay, well, this is great if you're from a first world nation, but third world nations don't have as many people going to participate and play right now. And that will obviously change 100 years from now. It's 100 years out. It's hard. But I'm saying if the Olympic Committee is anything like it is now, like it was 100 years ago and now, I would say never.
What about you, Justin?
I'm more on Andrew's side, if only because the Olympics, the trend if you look at where ratings were for the Olympics and just the health of the Olympic Games in general, they've been more prone to cut events than add them. I mean, like, they cut wrestling, I think, 4 years ago or 8 years ago. And that's, like, literally the entire, you know, predication of the Olympic Games was a wrestling tournament. So I almost, my, if I were forced gun to my head to bet, I would say that it is more likely to me that we see a big multi-country, gigantic tournament, esports tournament, that is more popular than the Olympic, than the Olympics adding.
Sure, sure, sure. And I don't doubt that. I think you're 100% right. There'll be some competitor. There'll be an X Games or an E Games type thing.
And look at like MMA and look at that. I mean, that was sort of a thing where boxing got boring. You know, boxing got very, very boring and didn't want to adapt into the fact that as we had an interest in many different fighting styles and we realized like, man, it's so rigged and all this, that there was an opportunity to just really explode into some other thing. Brian, let me say, like, if the question is like, hey, do you think 50 years from now, people might turn into more people going to watch an E-Olympics versus the Olympics? I would say, I think you might be right.
Sure, sure. But I think actually MMA is a really good example because I think that MMA is so outselling boxing. It's so much more popular now that I think in 50 years, MMA will supplant boxing in the Olympics. I think that the money will just get too big in MMA versus boxing. And I think likewise, in my maybe not in my lifetime, but in the next 100 years, I think the biggest money-making sport in the planet will be an e-sport. And once that happens, it'll become too big for the Olympics to ignore because ultimately they got to sell tickets. They got to put butts in seats. They got to make money.
Yeah, but the hard part is the way these things are organized. And if you ever dealt with, you know, I mean, I did judo competitively for 8 years and like, you know, dealt with the, you know, national judo with associations and stuff like that. They are so vested in their own sports and stuff that like, because the committee is formed by the bodies that represent these other sports that are part of it. And you would, you know, and it would be like, yeah, I think it'd be great to put MMA in the Olympics, be great. But it's like, yeah, well, the Taekwondo and the karate people, and they're like, I don't want it. You know, the judo, they're like, no, 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 we want our thing. We don't want this to threaten. So we will actively try to prevent that. So the only way you get that kind of thing in there is when a host country says, hey, we're going to champion this and we're going to put this, submit this forward to it. I mean, that's broadly, but that's the hard part is it really is this political organization that is vested, heavily invested in protecting what they are and not adopting to the new.
Well, yeah. Also think about it like this. There are two major club leagues that work like kind of above head and shoulders, everything else, maybe three, one or two of the soccer ones, like Premier League or the Spanish one, and then the NFL and the Olympics depends very heavily on not only television, but specifically American television. They delay medal ceremonies so NBC can air it live in America, much to the chagrin of a lot of competitors. But we haven't seen American football at the Olympics.
Although right? there is a movement trying to make that happen. Okay, but separate from all that,
yeah,
I have some Olympics related trivia for you guys. And I allow me to play Andrew Main here and see if he could solve my question. There's an Olympian named Hans Gunnar Liljenwall, Liljenwall. He was a Swedish pentathlete who's famous. He has a unique distinction in Olympic history. Do you have any guess as to why he what his distinction is?
He competed or won?
What's that?
Did he compete? You said the pentathlon was his event?
That was his event. I'm going to decline to answer that question on the grounds that it would give you the answer that I'm fishing.
Did he soil himself while competing?
Congratulations, Justin. He was the first Olympian to poop his pants during the pentathlon. No, no.
Did he always compete as the same gender?
He did. He did.
Was his nickname Brian Brushwood?
No. He was born the 9th of July, 1941, and he competed in the Olympics in 1968 in the Summer Olympics in the pentathlon.
So is he like, did he compete again?
The Wikipedia article, it says he also participated in the 1964 and the 1972 Olympics, but it was his 1968 participation that was of note.
Did he kill somebody?
No.
Did he poop himself while killing somebody?
No.
And changing his gender?
No. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Ready as we're ever going to be.
Hans Gunnar Lilienwald
took over the Nakatomi Tower.
No. He caused the disqualification of his entire Swedish team in the pentathlon for illegal substance abuse at the Olympics. Any guess what the substance was?
Alcohol?
He had two beers to calm his nerves before competing and winning in the pentathlon. Ended up getting his entire team disqualified.
Damn.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bronze medals. They had to return their bronze medals.
Wow. Because he had a few drinks and shot his pistol.
Two beers. To calm himself down.
He said, I'm going to go where people understand me, and took up residence in Texas.
Changed his name to Brian Brushwood, and he still looks great for 75.
Wow.
That's such a surprise to me, because I figured, like, of all the performance-enhancing, I'm using air quotes here, substances, I would think beer would be on the bottom of the list.
Who knows if it's still on there, but...
They got some weird rules.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is that, you know, what happened this year is like the anti-doping stuff caught up with the Russian technology.
Yep.
Oh, wait. Yeah. I read an article about Russia being banned from the Olympics. Was that this year or next time?
A number of athletes this year were banned.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
That's the problem. The problem is when the cheating comes from the systemic level. Like, that's really where you get your issues.
And I know this won't be a popular opinion, but I don't like the word cheating. It's like in a world where you're measuring protein to the, you know, 10th of an ounce or whatever. You know, there are substances that cause your muscles to do things. And I don't know. I think I'm in favor of the all-drug Olympics.
I love that SNL sketch.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, we have a little quandary here.
Uh-oh.
Why?
Meanwhile, on the Journey Quest.
Yeah! Yes. Dude, this is the number one segment in all of podcasting.
So what's happening right now is we've
of course, if you love Journey Quest, tweet hashtag Journey Quest right now.
Brian went off on his bicycle with your newfound companion, and we knew that some strange things were afoot because they saw signs that said salvation this way, and they may have seen people actually nailed to crosses, which, listen, it's Texas. Justice is swift and biblical. Justin was left behind in the battle van to wait it out while Brian and the companion drove on ahead on their bicycles and pedaled on through. Last week, we found out what Bryce was up to, the monster Bryce, and if you haven't listened to that one, we highly recommend you check that out, because periodically there are going to be side quests, and sometimes the group splits up and we're only able to follow what happens to one person. Well, today we're going to find out what's happening to Justin in the van. Justin?
Yeah, finally.
What are you doing in the van right now?
I'm checking provisions. I'm doing some inventory. You know, I'm just making sure. I'm making sure that crazy old coot that Brian made me put in the van, you know, didn't steal nothing.
The grieving mother.
Ready.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever. Listen, tomato, tomato.
So it's been several hours since Brian left.
Mm-hmm.
Are you concerned?
You know, I'm just trying. I think, you know, we had a great run, you know, me and Brian. It was really great times. But not going to lie, man, I'm just starting to think about heading on west, you know.
Into the city. This is the ghost of
into
Brian.
Into the city. Go get him, because that's where the signs say to you, salvation's this way.
I appear to you ephemerally, and I'm like, what? You're going to go to the city? You're not even going to wait for the recon report?
No, I'm thinking more around the city. Like, trying to find another way around so I can just keep heading west in general.
What if I found a bunch of valuable goods or perhaps valuable technicians that can aid us on our journey?
You know, understand, Justin, in Brian's mind, he found like a bunch of little packs with hearts on them. I mean, with crosses on them in like power-up food packs. He thinks this is the way that it works.
I don't know what we found, but I just can't believe you would pay
I mean,
me.
like the likelihood. Okay, let's really lay out the math here. The likelihood that you found, exactly what we needed to get on our journey faster and more comfortably.
It's already in every single convenience store you've passed along the way because 99.999% of the population's dead.
Yeah, 5%, mate. And I'm being generous because I believe in you. 95%, this is a death trap. You're the one who brought this on us by bringing this crazy old coot along with us. Like, it just is...
Hold on. Bringing this lady along did not
grieving
cause
young mother.
This town to appear. I did not... The two are not connected, my ghost says to you.
We all got different ways of looking at the world. And I think that that's, you know, part of what's just organically kind of happening here. I feel like your ghost is telling me, you should just go by yourself. Like,
okay.
You should just go.
Smash cut. It's not a ghost. It's me with a walkie-talkie. I left a walkie-talkie in the vent so that I could talk to you
while
I was
out on the road.
Well,
no, Brian, you guys did have walkie-talkies to communicate with. Did you set some sort of plan for when you're going to check in with each other?
Yeah, it's called I left one on in the vent so that I could pretend to be a ghost for this moment. And then I realize, I say, Justin, I'm not a ghost. It's actually me. We're on the recon.
No, Brian, you don't. You don't.
Why not?
We're not in your quest part right now. You just don't. Mm. Okay.
Okay.
Brian.
Yeah.
But how was I talking to him then?
He was hallucinating your voice.
Okay. Yeah. That's good enough for me.
I was acting out both parts. All right. You want to know what? Fine. I look at the walkie-talkie. Let me just go see what's up. Let me talk to Brian. I try to talk to Brian.
So you get on the walkie-talkie.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Brian. Just checking in, man. How's that recon going? I'd never leave you.
Static.
Just want to let you know, Brian. Our partnership is what keeps me alive. Brothers forever. Over.
Static.
All right. If you're trying to tell me that I should just leave, then don't say anything.
Hey, who is on this channel?
You got any gum? Hey, my name is Brian Brushwood. And I live in Austin, Texas. No. I live at...
No.
Brian, your signal's coming in pretty close to my transmitter here.
Oh, I'm a ham radio enthusiast. Is that how this works? I forget.
Brian, this isn't a ham radio frequency.
Anyway, well, science, am I right?
Are you in trouble? Do you need help?
I don't know. Do you need help? He was asking the questions here.
99.9% of the population's dead, Brian. I think you need help. I think we all need help. Why don't we help each other?
Who are you?
Help.
Is that your first name or your last name, doofus?
Click.
Can I hop on the CB at this appropriately timed moment?
No, Brian.
Oh, because I'm off on... Okay.
No, Brian.
I'm just going to go... All right. I go back on the walkie-talkie. Help. I need somebody. Help.
Not just anybody.
Help. You know I need someone. Help. Listen, that was a Beatles song. I was thinking about it, thinking about you, I was a real chode earlier, and I want to apologize. That was not me. Listen, this. In fact, I'm not even Brian Brushwood. My name is Andrew Main, and you might have seen I had a television show. It was great. So
the Carbonara effect.
Help, I love are you that bad? Guy. I mean, did he help back, or did he just come on for one sassy one-liner?
He just came on to zing Andrew Main.
Yes. So this is help. You can call me Joe.
Joe, listen. So thank you for accepting my apology. Where are you relative to Salvation?
Salvation's about 2 miles south. I'm watching you right now from the hill.
If you're watching me right now, then which of my two testicles did I just...
If you step outside your van, I'll tell you.
All right. I just wanted to make sure that you weren't a fellow magician. All right. So you're up in the hills. Why aren't you in Salvation?
Because I just escaped from there.
Oh, wait. Okay, all right, Joe, I know this is going to come off as a little forward, but I just got to ask you, are you a killer of people?
Before or after the apocalypse?
I mean, like, all right, understand, sometimes we gotta take our chances here. And listen, if we all gang up together, because we're all cool and the gang, then you're going to understand that if I had my druthers, I would have killed this one Looney Tune that Brian really made an issue about picking up. By the way, my name's not Andrew Main. My name is Justin Young. You can call me Justin Young.
Listen, I'm not really sure what to believe right now.
Hey, we all got to cover our tracks. Let me, all right, here. So... What are you just living out there? You a naturalist? You in a tent? What's going on?
I'm planning a raid on Salvation.
What do they got in there?
I think they got a cure.
Wait, hold on. Hold on. At this point, I show up as a cartoon little conscience thing on Justin's side, and yeah. I'm like, what does he mean cure? Everybody who caught it died. Everyone who's alive is immune.
Hold on, conscience. Hey, Joe, what do you mean a cure? Everybody who caught it died. Everybody who didn't have it is still alive. What cure and what?
There's a second variant. Some people are still dying.
Ask him for evidence.
What's your evidence, Joe?
Radio reports. Have you been listening to the channels?
No. What is the good radios?
He's got to keep scanning.
We've been doing our own podcast. We don't listen to radio much.
Listen, all I know is that some people have been well and then they got sick because this thing mutates fast. There's a reason it took down so many people. There's not just one version of it. There's multiple versions of it that appeared in different parts of the world.
All right.
Now I've heard... It's stockpiled there. I got away from there. Chances are your friend is probably being held captive. If you want to rescue your friend, we need to go get him.
Now, let me ask you this here, Joe. How am I supposed to believe that you're actually somebody who's out here trying to find a cure and get it out to people, not just somebody who's in Salvation, trying to lure dullards like me into a trap?
Well, look out your window. And you look out your window, and what do you see? Mm-hmm. You see a guy standing there, right? Arms open, harmless as could be, wide open, radio in around his neck. Okay? It's maybe late 50s. And... He sounds a lot like Brian, but he looks nothing like Brian.
Is this my cue to step in as Joe?
Yes, Joe.
Oh. Hey, buddy.
Wait, what?
I'm not Brian Brushwood. I just sound like him. I escaped from salvation, and I'm here to help you. That's why I told you to call me help on the radio.
But you're 50 years old, and you look like garbage. You fell apart. Jeez,
I'm not Brian Brushwood. I just sound enough like him that Brian Brushwood could play me if there was an audio presentation.
Wow, you look like a terrible, fatter Brian Brushwood.
All right, you know what? I'm reconsidering helping you out at all. Maybe it's best that I just set fire to your war wagon. Also, by the way, if you're on a bicycle, I wouldn't be doing this.
Are you sure you're not right? Joe, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Used to call me Tomcat back in the old days.
Okay. Joe, when did you get to salvation? Also, I'm going to hold the gun on you. It's nothing personal. It's the apocalypse.
All right, look, if you want the help, you're going to have to put the gun down. All right? Look, I'm unarmed.
All right, hold on. While we're all men here, I hold the gun, but it's behind my back.
Okay.
I can barely shoot. It's kind of fancy.
That's fine. Look, here's what matters is I've been scouting out this den of horrors for months, and yeah. I put together this video dossier. Here, it's on an old iPod Touch. Let me open it. Let me punch in my password. There we go. Let me show it to you. Take a look at that, sir.
What do I see?
I'm relying on Andrew at this point.
So, your video dossier, what is it?
It's a collection of surveillance that kind of tells
the Golden Girls the story. On Endless Loop, all right? It's a VHS tape.
Thank you for being a friend.
Okay, yeah. So I show it to you, and it's definitely just the intro to the Golden Girls on repeat.
All right, Joe, come on, man. Number one, I need to know a little bit more about you. And number two, if you want my help for this raid, what's going on? And how do you know that Brian's being held captive?
Well, I have it on very good authority. Look, I've been monitoring the people who talk over in Salvation. They use a frequency that is not the frequency you're on. And if you'd bothered to scan any other frequencies, you would have heard them talking about it. They were talking about how they found two, and I quote, dumbasses riding bicycles. And they were able to easily capture them because they got stuck in the sand when they were trying to get away. They've got them captured. They got them holed up. They say they're interrogating them, but as I listen to their conversations, it really sounds like they're just poking them with sticks, torturing them.
So you're saying that my only hope of getting Brian back is if I team up with you and we do a daring raid into Salvation to not only free Brian, but also get the cure.
No. My entire point was, if you haven't noticed, I'm a little bit older, a little bit fatter than Brian, but I sound a lot like him. If you'd like, the two of us could just keep on heading west and you could put this all in your rearview mirror. I'm just saying.
Smash cut, Brian and Joe riding down the road. Thank you for being a friend.
Next time on Journey Quest, we'll find out if Justin's going to try to save his friend Brian, or maybe Brian doesn't need saving at all. We don't really know.
Oh, man.
Is Joe to be trusted? Does Joe have hidden motivations?
Joe Help was a very expendable character, and instead you expended Brian Brushwood.
You don't know. I have a lot of different ways.
Maybe the journey continues with Justin and Joe.
I don't like him.
That sounds a lot like Brian, but he's so much fatter and
older.
Looking.
And older, yeah.
Older.
Yeah.
Ale.
He's got a more interesting backstory.
All right. Gentlemen, you want to do some picks?
I got another Texas tale for you guys. I finished up Preacher. And
oh, shoot.
That show is it is so unique in that I don't even necessarily agree with some of the decisions that they're going in, but it is so weird and unhinged, and the things that it gets right is just so up my alley that I can't help but love it. You know, like there are moments in the final episodes where characters that I thought I had a beat on how they would act went way beyond where I thought their capacity was, that fundamentally changed who they were. And I, in another show, I'd be like, "Ah, that's weird. That's just kind of bad writing." But it almost doesn't matter, you know. It's so big and fun and silly and horror when it needs to be horror and comedy when it needs to be comedy. It's just, you know, one of my favorite things that I've seen in recent memory.
So, minor spoiler. The last episode of season one wraps up in a way that gets the three main characters on the road, sets up a road trip, right?
Which is the entire actual Preacher story. Like everything that happened in that first season is either taking little bits and pieces from the actual comic, but inventing basically like a prequel season where we understand who Jesse Custer is and Cassidy is and Rose. Sorry, Tulip are before, you know, they get on the road, which is really the meat of the comic.
Yes. I got to admit, man, I adored it. I adored the ending, even though it was extreme and, you know, comic booky and just like, and let's sweep the table clean. Here's what the story is. And they sort of, you know, magicians have that saying, if you want to hide it, paint it red. They definitely painted it red when they announced, like, well, let's go looking for spoiler alert, let's go looking for God. And then Cassidy says, wait, so like a road trip? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, what? We're going to get in fights and have adventures and do whatever? And they're like, yeah, we sure are. And as if by painting it red, they massaged over the ridiculousness of the abrupt change. And
I mean, considering what happens for the meat of the rest of that episode, like it all kind of feels almost secondarily silly. Like I don't even want to spoil either the promise that Jesse Custer makes to his congregation or how it is resolved. But it's amazing and it's so over the top. And it's so silly, but you have such an investment in that universe that it worked. It felt so cool.
Absolutely. Well, and that's one thing the series has been good at from the beginning is inoculating you against what might otherwise be an overly silly pill to swallow by just prepping you for it to where you go along for the ride.
I will just say, if there is a better moment in television this year than something that is screamed by a man holding a Tupperware container from the back of the church in that final episode of Preacher, I will be delighted, because that was I could not even hold myself together. It was one of the funniest moments I've ever seen.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
Brian, you have a pick?
Yeah, man. This is the part where I'm going to regret talking to Justin, and instead I should have been doing my research and found out the names. But when you called us from the road, you were on the line with the author of the Jack of Souls series. What was his name again?
Stephen Merlino.
Stephen Merlino. And I bought the book, and I sat on it, and I finally started reading it. Loved it. It's one of those things where it's like when you're in the moment, you're like, oh, let me just go ahead and grab the thing because I'm with the guy and he seems cool. So let me throw this in there. I was bummed to discover that I guess only one book has come out of the Unseen Moon series. But it's got a unique magic system. It's got a unique story, a unique world. It reminded me a lot of what I loved both about Name of the Wind and the Gentleman Bastard series. It seems like there's a popular archetype of a lovable rogue in a unique, different fantasy world. And I got to tell you, man, I really, really dug it. And you can get it on Audible right now. It's exquisitely performed in audiobook format. The guy does a fantastic job.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Andrew?
My pick. The pick that I'm about to make is a pick that I'm picking because
you're going third.
This is a smash cut to that Family Guy skit where Stephen King goes to his publisher and is looking around like it's about a haunted lamp. The lamp's gonna get you.
Actually, it's the book, the movie rather, Mr. Holmes, based on A Slight Trick of Mind by Mitch Cullen. This is Ian McKellen plays an aging Sherlock Holmes who's like in his 80s or 90s. And so it's this really interesting take on Sherlock Holmes where he's dealing with Alzheimer's and stuff. And he's got to deal with kind of one last case. And he's, you know, living now in this, you know, the south of England in his sort of summerly sort of estate with his, you know, he's got a housekeeper and her boy. And he develops a friendship with the young boy because he's very intelligent. And he's sort of Laura Linney is in it, playing Miss Monroe, is the mother, the boy's mother. I loved it for several reasons. One, it is a fantastic Ian McKellen performance, as they all are, playing an iconic character in his own way. The storyline deals with Holmes both trying to deal with sort of a mystery in the present, a mystery in the past, and sort of trying to resolve something. So it beautifully intertwines sort of three conflicts in which he needs to resolve. And that's what the heart of story is. And the way that this does, I thought was exceptional. I thought it was just a really, really enjoyable film. So that's Mr. Holmes. It's both, you can, I think it's on Amazon.
Oh, it's free with Amazon Prime.
Yeah. And the book, I've not read the book, but I'm tempted to. There's a ton of Sherlock Holmes literature. I even was asked to participate in an anthology of involving a very popular, very, very popular IP and rhymes with Redditor. And I had proposed, my favorite proposal, among other ones, was actually Sherlock Holmes versus this character. But that one was not being put forth, although that would have been cool. Anyhow, Mr. Holmes, highly recommend it.
Dude. I'm down with that. I want to watch it.
Yeah. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.